Welcome to another episode of the TD Pod, abbreviated edition. I am your host, Travis Roeder, here with my co-host, Jeff Davis. Jeff, I think usually one of our answers individually lasts for 30 minutes. So let's see if we can both talk about the Colorado game and the BYU game in 30 minutes.
Yeah, let's do this. I've got a, you know, we've been wanting to do a quick pod maybe before Colorado and then definitely afterwards. And we've been pretty busy trying to get this like set up with life, and you were actually at the game. So let's just start there. Like, tell me, like, give me a quick vibe check. What was it like actually being there in the stadium for the game?
It was interesting. You know, I'm probably not the best person to ask this because I actually haven't been to too many Big 12 away stadiums before. I've been to the Oklahoma Stadium. I've been to the Oklahoma State Stadium. I've been to TCU. But I think that's probably it. Like, I haven't been out to Tech or anything like that. I never went down to Austin or A&M. So anyway, I was kind of curious because obviously OU and Oklahoma State are very different from one another, and TCU is, you know, very, very different from all the rest of those. So anyway, kind of getting there. I mean, the weather we knew is kind of be nasty. The fans were pretty vitriolic. It was kind of crazy. I feel like it's hard to estimate, but I feel like the people I saw there, it was definitely the lowest ratio of what I ever suspected to be like actual graduates of the university that were there at the games. Like, it seems like the Dion factor has attracted quite a few just like want to come watch the game thing, which is cool, but it was different.
Yeah. I can totally buy that.
Yeah. We were walking up to the game, and like this like small chick actually like got in my friend, like male friend's face, and like did some sort of, they do like a SCO buffs where they put their hand up by their head, like a bison horn, I guess, or a buffalo horn. Is there a difference? Buffalo, bison? We don't have time to get
it. And then an American buffalo is my understanding, but someone can correct me.
Okay. Yeah. She like got in his face and like, you know, multiple expletives, like 3 inches from his face. So I was just like, and then I kind of went male mode where I was like, I hope somebody does this to my wife so I get to get in a fight. Like, this is going to be fantastic. You know, like, but anyway, I mean, the stadium was interesting. You know, the crowd was pretty hyped up. The rain was sort of a factor. It was never terrible, but like, I actually watched the video of the Hail Mary on my wife's phone. She took a video during it. And I was like even more impressed with Shedeur Sanders on that throw because there was a pretty heavy rain. Like, to be able to throw like that going to your left. Anyway. Yeah, so just kind of impressive. But I mean, the atmosphere was pretty cool. It was definitely not like a super intimidating place to play, I don't think. Like, they got loud like when they were supposed to get loud, but it wasn't one of those places that was just like kind of like loud. They're still learning, I guess, how to be an intimidating home field environment. So our seats were terrible for like the first quarter. I couldn't see super great because it was one of those deals where a bunch of people were standing on top of the bleacher in front of me, and so, you know, I was kind of like craning my neck around and stuff, but by the end of the, you know, people kind of stopped doing that and stuff. So already too long of an answer, but it was fun. There's just nothing like being at a college football game, and I actually really enjoy going to away games. It's just kind of like you feel like a, you know, kind of fish out of water type thing. You're there at watching the enemy, so it was fun.
I heard the vibe check on that for the like vitriol does ring true. So one of my former bosses is now a VP at Google. She posted on Twitter after the fact that she had 17 F-bombs directed in her, like walking out of the stadium, that she was like, right. And this is a woman that keeps her cool. Like, I mean, you're a VP at Google, like you got your stuff together. And I could tell from the tweets that she was frustrated at it being like treated that way, to be frank. Like, it was definitely the impression that I got from the couple of people that went was that after the game especially, there was this like, you know, double finger, like,
sure,
Stone Cold Steve Austin, like, give the stunner.
It's interesting to think about whether they'd be better or worse if they had ended up losing the game. I don't know, but yeah, you never know. So yeah, that was cool. Like I said, it was, you know, the grass field with the rain was interesting. I don't think it was a huge factor in the game. I think, you know, I told my friends before the game, I was like, I feel like, you know, when you're playing your team millions of dollars, like, you can probably afford to just have like 100 footballs now. And I think that's part of it. Like, you notice, like, they were basically exchanging footballs almost every down. So I think it just, unless it's like a full monsoon. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, they have like full sets of cleats now. This is not Baylor in like 2003 where it's like one set of cleats, and if it starts getting muddy, like, it's a slip and slide. Like, right, they're over there changing cleats on the sidelines. Like, it's not, I mean, it's semi-pro. It really is. And so, right, like, it, you know, they've got the equipment to manage a lot of that now, I think, compared to what it used to be like.
All right. Well, why don't you start with kind of either high level or nitty gritty, you know, however you want to do it as far as kind of your overall takeaway from the game.
For me, it's very, like, I think this one's high level for us. My takeaway is that I feel a little worse about Baylor for the 2024 season because I still think Colorado sucks. I just do. I think Colorado sucks. I think Baylor did not play very well, and that has me down a little bit on Baylor for 2024. You know, I still feel pretty confident that they're going to get to six wins. There was a moment during the first half where I kind of thought, okay, maybe seven or eight is the baseline for this team, but they just couldn't put it together. And it's kind of like, no, I don't think seven or eight is really the baseline. I think probably like five is the baseline, and they're probably going to get to six. That's still my vibe. But I did feel, you know, so much negative traffic about like the Dave Aranda experience and could Dave Aranda survive and all this kind of stuff. And I got to be honest, like I felt more confident about the direction of the program after the game on Saturday than I have, I think, since probably Texas Tech at 22. Actually, that's probably not even accurate because so much of the 22 Tech game was individual players not being happy and kind of taking that on themselves. It's probably Oklahoma 22 was the last time I felt this confident. And it just like it's a real football team. Like the issues of the end of 22, the issues that they had in 23, like those are not the issues we have now. Like, yeah, they lost the game. It's a total gut punch the way they lost it. But you know, they lost it because they have two position groups on the field and safety and offensive line. They're just not all that good. And the staffs for Baylor put them in the best possible position to make plays. They couldn't make the play. The defensive line couldn't make the plays in the first half. The secondaries, particularly the safeties, like they just gacked on plays over and over again in the game. I mean, there's just no way to put that. And the offensive line couldn't block in pass protection. Like there's a reason that they're taking rail shots. I mean, it's 2 seconds and the ball's out. Like there's not, you know, they're
not even really running mesh. They ran mesh one time.
They can't block them. There's no way to put that. They can't block them. And that is an indictment over the recruiting to get to this point. It's also true that it does seem like the NIL stuff has really, to be frank, like kind of been fixed in a way that makes me feel more comfortable. I mean, they're recruiting at a rate right now that is the best that they've, I think, done since 2019, that last year with Rule, where it's the first time where I feel like it's a competent recruiting class that we're starting to put together. You know that way better than me. But like, I'm okay with the gut punch loss if I feel like the team is moving forward, because we talked about this a lot last year where it was, we kept saying, like, we'll see where they're at in two weeks. And then we got to the Tech game at the start of October. It's like, oh no, this team sucks. That the team that played on Saturday was miles better than the team that played against Utah, which was miles better than the team that played before. It was not just Robertson. Like the team as a whole had gotten better. You know, you can see that on the field. So a little bit worse about 2024, but much, much happier and an improved outlook about the direction of the program for the first time in almost 2 years. What about you?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is how good is Colorado? Because I really do. Okay. I'll dive a little bit more specific on that in a minute. But, you know, is this one of the hardest things to watch or one of the hardest things to discern when you're watching a football game? The famous example from this is, I can't remember how many years ago this was now, but I think it was Florida State and LSU opened on like a Friday night or something like that. And it was this barn burner of a game. It was like 41-38 or something. And both teams were ranked in the top five. And everyone was just talking about, you know, whoever was going to win is going to go on to the national championship. And then both teams actually were just like really average or bad the rest of the year. Right. Yeah. And so it can be hard when you're watching two teams of equivalent ability going at each other to discern, okay, is this two really good teams going at it, two bad teams, et cetera. I get more when I was watching that game live. The impression I got was this is two kind of mediocre to solid teams going at it. Probably a little bit more on the mediocre end than solid. I think both teams, it was interesting, like just had such clear strengths and weaknesses that it made for this interesting chess match is not the right analogy. It was just kind of just like two fight, like one boxer who's missing his left leg and the other one who has like one eye, and it's like, okay, you know, well, actually I would definitely take the guy with one eye, but whatever, you know. It's like these clear deficiencies and clear strengths, and both coaching staffs were trying to work around it, and so that was kind of interesting to see live, because like as you said, Baylor's offensive line is just really bad. On review, that was one of the things that really stuck out to me. Like live, I knew just from the way that Spavadal was calling the game, I was like, if he trusted his offensive line, he wouldn't be calling this many runs, and he would actually call a passing play that lasted longer than 2 seconds. And then on rewatch, it was like, even on the plays that the passing plays where Robertson was immediately getting rid of the ball, Colorado was sending four guys, maybe five, and still getting home to them. So, I mean, just Baylor's offensive line just can't pass protect right now. So I think that's really hamstringing them. But anyway, kind of more overall, it's just like, yeah, again, trying to discern how – if Colorado is really bad, then that bodes really poorly for Baylor the rest of the year, I think, because –
I don't think Colorado is, like, really bad. I do think they're just – like, I think the median, I'm going to get statistical here. I think the median talent level on Baylor is actually like higher than Colorado by a good bit. Colorado just has these like 5 to 7 dudes that are like, oh, like Travis Hunter is like a top three pick. I mean, he just is. Mm-hmm.
Baylor did Sanford, not throw at him all night, I don't think.
They throw at him literally all night. Yeah, they didn't go near him. You know, and if Sanders' last name was like literally anything other than Sanders, he's going in the top two rounds. I feel based off that last throw that they did at the end of the game, like, and we'll talk about that in a second. Like, he would go, you know, and it just, they have a handful of players that are like better than anyone that Baylor has on the roster right now, I think. But then everyone outside of that is just not good. I mean,
about their defensive front? Because I thought their defensive front was very good. Well, actually, I thought their whole defense was very good.
I think their defense, like, it's a well-schemed defense. They take advantage of the fact that what they can do with the corners, where they can just, I mean, it's almost like the cover three stuff that you used to see at Seattle, the Legion of Boom, where like they put these dudes, they give them inside leverage, and they just say like, we're going to give you the rail. If you can hit this shot with a great throw, go forth. And on the slot fade, we're going to give you inside leverage. We're going to take inside leverage and let you take the slot fade, and we're just going to make you hit these tough shots like over and over and over again. We're going to cap who we think has the not your best guy, but who we think is the weakest matchup, which I think if they had one thing I wish Spav had gotten onto earlier, and I think he adjusted to this in the second half, but they didn't pick up that they weren't capping the boundary guy necessarily. What they tended to do was the deep safety tended to drop over whoever they thought was the weakest matchup. And so which I actually think is the right call. If I'm the defensive coordinator, that's how I would approach it. But it also meant that one of the reasons the slot fades were not there was that was not the worst matchup on the field. They took that away, and then they were putting like their second best corner on that guy, and then forcing the safety over the top with the worst guy on the outside, typically on the boundary. And so, as a result of that, like, they just didn't – there wasn't really anywhere to go with those three receivers. And Baylor, the only thing Baylor felt comfortable with was the shot plays, like, over and over and over again.
That's all they had.
And there just wasn't there. So I say that going back to the defensive front. Like, it's also easier to play defensive front when, like –
They were outnumbering Baylor. I mean, yeah.
They're outnumbering Baylor, and it's like, hey, here's your gap. Run into this gap every single play. If it's a run, like, go get the ball. Don't lose contain. And if it's not a run, go hit the QB. And, like, that's the game plan for the defensive front. When you have a secondary.
What I would say to that, though, is, like, bad defenses can still mess that up. Like, I don't think Colorado has a bad defense. You know, like.
They don't have a bad defense. They played hard, yeah. Their offensive line is so bad that – they don't, like, it's hard for me to imagine that they're going to be able to really do too much against a sound defense. And that's one of the things that I was struck by. I thought Baylor's defense actually was very sound. Like, they couldn't get him on. I texted you this like with about 5 minutes left in the second quarter, and I was like, I've got a really bad feeling about this, because Baylor should be up like 31-10, and that was like the point, like, right before the terrible luck with that long touchdown where it's 24-17. Right. Like it should have been 30, like it should have been 34-10. They just could not, like, they couldn't get Sanders on the ground in the first half. And it just, like, they just couldn't close the play. And there's just no way to put it. Like they were in position over, the scheme put them in position over and over and over again. And the defense played very sound with like what they did in the run. I mean, they were stopping the run with like five in the box. I mean, it was nuts. They really, to me, the tail defensively was they couldn't get him on the ground in the first half. And then over the course of the game, and you have like these four or five plays where like a safety's in position and the safety just totally gacks the play. I mean, like, I wasn't even that mad at the final, and let's do the Hail Mary real quick. Like, that didn't even piss me off too much because they should have scored the previous play. Like, they also got
completely screwed on that not first down call, by the way. When I saw that on review, I don't know if you remember that on live. Like,
oh,
that,
no, I do. The referee.
If that happened to Baylor,
it was awful both ways.
Yeah, I mean, if that had happened to Baylor, so basically what happened is Colorado threw the ball for a first down, but the official literally spotted the ball about 3 yards short of where the receiver caught it. I mean, y'all are going to think I'm exaggerating, but go back and watch. It's literally 3 yards short.
Yeah, it was awful.
And so anyway, that cost Colorado like 20, like something like 20 seconds or something when they had 40 seconds left. And I'm just telling you right now, like, I don't usually get mad at officiating, but that basically eliminated any chance they had at winning, except for then they, of course, hit the Hail Mary. So go ahead on the Hail Mary.
So the Hail Mary thing, like, I don't have any problem with it. Statistically, like, for me, Hail Marys, so my approach to defense when I'm not a play caller. I've always viewed it like statistically, which is you put your defense in the best, like you try to stack the odds as much as possible in your favor, and then you pull the lever on the slot machine, you see what happens on the play. And the odds are actually like very, very, not the odds, the numbers are really overwhelming that when you can force a QB to his opposite shoulder, his accuracy numbers just totally fall through the floor. Okay. So in this case, Sanders is like rotating to his opposite shoulder. He makes the only other QB that I can remember making a throw in that pressure time, and this is not an exaggeration, like Aaron Rodgers made a similar throw to beat Dallas in, I think, 2016 in the playoffs. Maybe it was 2014. I don't remember, but this was the home. This was not the Dez Cotic game, but he rolled out to his left on a similar thing. And he threw like across his body while he was fading back a similar distance and hit a pinpoint strike, like on the sidelines. It wasn't in the end zone. It was on the sidelines and set it up in the divisional round. I think that was 2014. That might've been 2015 or 16. But it was that good of a throw. I mean, it was a crazy good throw. But it's also worth saying that, like, if the safeties make the correct play, it doesn't matter. Because once he rolls out, like, the whole point of doing the overload
is that... You don't need to be on the right side of the field.
You don't need to be on the right side of the field. So, like, you have three safeties that are capping all the routes. And as soon as he turns his shoulders, the second he turns his shoulders, you shift. Everyone is running laterally to the side of the field, and none of the safeties did that. Like
one of them literally had his heels like on the back of the end zone line. It was insane.
Yeah, and it's just you can't like. There's no. It's hard for me to believe that the rest of the team, and this is the thing that I do appreciate about the fact that these dudes are getting paid now, because now it's just very easy for me to say this. I just don't believe that the corners are that like. Snats played a great game on Saturday. He was awesome. I can't believe that Snacks is that well coached and the linebackers are that well coached and the defensive line is that well coached, but suddenly, magically, for some reason, the safeties don't know what they're doing. Like, it's pretty improbable to me that every other position group on the defense is executing their play assignments at a high level. And that for some reason the safeties just pretty magically, despite the fact that we know that like Petrie thinks the safeties coach is amazing, like he loves him and he'll tell you that, like he's one of the best coaches he's ever had. you know, we have this guy that we have an NFL Pro Bowler that says he's an amazing coach. Everyone else on the team is great, is like warning their assignments. And these dudes are just like constantly rotating in and out because they are blowing play calls or they're blowing technique or they're not in the right spots. And like, there's just at a certain point, like it's on the kids to execute. And there's just no way to put that. Like, even on that totally bizarre play where where they went up, got to 17 points in the second quarter, like the safety's just standing there. Like, you're 3 yards away. Put your body on him and get his ass on the ground. Like, that's all you got to do. And you just, like, you stopped on the play. And then, yeah, he got blocked in the back. But I can't even get mad that he got blocked in the back to get that touchdown, because you just stood there while the guy was going to the ground 3 yards away. Like, put your ass on him. Get him on the ground. That's all you got to do. If you had fallen on him, that's not a touchdown. And they didn't do it. Yeah. And it just, like, over and over again, you texted me this, I think it was early last week, but you said, like, this is the game I feel like that we could be talking about afterwards. And you listed off some of the safeties, and you're like, they could have won this, but these dudes blew the game. And that really is how I felt coming out of the game. Like, the safety play was just really bad.
Yeah, I think it was the one kind of clear weakness. So I don't think that was a genius take for me. I think it is probably the weak link of the defense right now. Obviously, yeah. We could talk a lot more about the Colorado game. We just don't have time. I want to make sure that we get to the BYU game. Last thing I want to say related to the Colorado game is just kind of speaking to what you kind of talked to at the beginning with people being so upset about, kind of the Aranda narrative about this game, right? What I would say about that is, I think I found the reaction being so directed at Randa somewhat surprising, purely because of this reason. I was there last year when I watched the Cincinnati game, and I was like, this team is really bad, because Cincinnati was terrible and Baylor gave up 300 and something yards rushing to them. When we watched them against Tech, awful. When we watched them against Texas, it wasn't even close, like way worse. And so like that happened like 7 or 8 times last year. I was just like, this team is terrible. Like this season is awful. So I was so low down there last year. And like at any point last year, I kind of was with everyone with all of this, upsetness. And so I don't say that to mean like, okay, well, just because Baylor's getting back to solid or mediocre, that means that Aranda should keep his job. That's not what I mean. I think how I feel about it is like, let's just see how the rest of the season plays out, because I know that this team is way better than last year. If we get to the end,
playing hard, that is not that's not a question for any of those dudes that rotated in yesterday.
And so how I feel it is like, if we get to the end of the season, or if even maybe a couple games left in the season, they're like, okay, look, this is like a 4 or 5 win Baylor team. They were much better, but it wasn't good enough. Yeah, like that's when I'm going to kind of really start thinking about Aranda's job security and stuff like that. But at least for now, I'm just like, look, they just lost a really close game on the road. Was it horrible? Was it a gut punch? Yes, yes. Did I think Aranda should have been fired last year? Yes. Like I'm kind of there, but it's just, I don't know. I feel like I watched like 7 or 8 or maybe honestly almost every game last year was just so much worse than anything we saw against Colorado. Yeah, I'm just not as upset about it anymore. So maybe that's what it is. I don't know.
Yeah, there's one more thing I want to say on that, because you and I are in agreement. Like, I remember watching the Tech game was the early part of October last year, and I remember watching that game and being like, they're done. Like, it's not this. It's a 2-win team. Like, they are just there. It's not a functioning football team. That's a functioning football team. Like, they're clearly getting better each week. BYU is going to be a hard BYU is going to be a hard game. We're going to talk about that in a sec. But they are a functioning football team. The last thing I want to say on Colorado, though, is I have a lot of hope for Robertson. I wish he could remember how feet work, because he goes through these spells that are like multi-drive longs where his feet just like, I don't even know what to describe, like how to describe it. It's like watching like a Who Framed Roger Rabbit or something, and his feet are just like flopping all over the place in the backfield, and his accuracy just like, it's not like it like goes away. It's like he's just firing balls backwards like a Madden game or something.
There was one of the shots to Baldwin, his feet were really, really bad, and it was like one of his one like really bad throws of the night.
Yeah, and you don't know when it's going to come back, and then he'll hit a throw, and you're like, oh, Robertson's back. And then he was good the rest of the game. But it is also like, he played 3 games in that game. He played great for the first 20 minutes of the game. He was awful for the next 15 minutes of the game. And then he played great the remaining section. Like, he had this 4 to 5 drive section where it was like, oh, this is why they went with Finn, because he almost looks unplayable. He can't hit easy. Like, he's making the reads, but he can't make the throw, where I think the opposite was true of Finn, where Finn could make some of the throws, but he just couldn't make the reads. And like seeing that live, like I really, everyone's rooting for Robertson. It seems like the team really has bought in on him. But he's got to get his feet worked out to where he doesn't just fall apart like that. Because when it goes like that, it's like they can't even throw the ball till he gets it back. Okay, we got to get the BYU.
Yeah, really good team. I was kind of like, before 2022, it was Travis's Jayhawks when I was predicting they would get above their 2-win season total. I was really happy to see them. I kind of have been all in on BYU this offseason, and I'm not going to lie and say I'm not happy to pat myself on the back a little bit there. They're just a really old team, and that was the biggest thing this offseason. I looked at them, and I was like, oh my God, everyone is a senior. And at BYU, that means they're all like 25 years old. And so I kind of went into this season saying either they're going to be better or Satake's going to get fired, because if you don't win in your year where you have all seniors that are 25 years old, when are you ever going to win? Yeah. And they made a change at defensive coordinator. They're playing very aggressive. Ironically, or I don't know if that's the right use of the word ironically, but they're another one of these teams like Utah and like Colorado that they have gone all in on. We're going to play press man coverage with a single high safety. We're going to take away all the easy throws, and we're going to be really aggressive and bet that you can't execute your offense well enough to beat it. And they've been really good that year, doing that this year. Offense has been so-so. I like to call their quarterback Jake Retzlaff. I said yesterday on Twitter, he's like a completely insane Blake Shapen, like in the sense that it's like Blake Shapen at 1.2x speed. Like, he has all the same strengths and weaknesses. He's not a great quarterback, but he has some clear strengths and clear weaknesses. So anyway, Jeff, I've watched pretty except for their FCS game, I've watched all their games this year. What have you seen from them?
So I'm not I tuned into them Saturday night to watch them against KSU. That's the first time I've really seen them in depth. Basically everything that you just said, I actually think that they're a little bit opposite. Earlier in the pod, I said that Baylor had a higher median talent level than Colorado, but Colorado had these like, you know, 4 to 7 just absolute studs. I actually think it's the exact opposite with BYU. Like, the median guy on BYU is better and more experienced than Baylor across the board. But the flip side of that is, like, they don't have anything like the cornerback talent that Colorado does to be running a similar scheme. So it's much more likely to me that Baylor's going to be able to consistently hit some of the shots that they hit, because you're putting these dudes one-on-one. Well, they can, you know, they know their assignment, they know how to execute, but at the end of the day, like, none of those dudes are Travis Hunter, you know? Right. And so I, like, it's the scheme that BYU runs is, it's different than what Utah does, but right, what BYU is really focused on is kind of like, it reminds me a little bit of, the Phil, like, if Baylor fans never saw the full Phil Bennett scheme, because he only installed, I would guess, like 25% to 33% of his defense because of the way they practiced. So I mean, like, I just, you Baylor fans don't know what the full Phil Bennett scheme looked like, but from what Phil Bennett used to run at Kansas State like 15 to 20 years ago, it reminds me a lot of that, where it's very aggressive. They want to line up and just kind of go for it on big downs. Like, you know what you're going to get. It's the band's going to play, or a sack, one of those two. They're going to go just go after that and just trust that their dudes can hold up. I do think you're going to see a lot more stuff in the middle on this, because while they're sending more people numerically like Bennett did, I don't think their front is as athletic. I think they're like better with technique, if that makes sense. So I actually think Baylor's not going to have much of a, like, I think their run game is really going to struggle, but I do think that unless they're sending like 6+, that Baylor's going to have a chance to throw the ball in this game.
One thing I really noticed, in comparison to when BYU played SMU versus when TCU just played, I've watched both of those games. TCU just lost pretty big.
We got to do 60 seconds at TCU before we get off the call.
Sure. But the biggest thing I noticed in the difference in those games is that SMU, when they played TCU, when they went horizontal, SMU has a ton of speed. And they went sideline to sideline, and they created a bunch of huge plays by just those types of plays where the guy's running completely horizontal, finds a tiny crease, and then breaks it off for a 50-yard gain. That's how SMU was beating TCU. That basically never happened against BYU, because all those guys tackle really well. All of them do. Yeah. Their safeties are veterans. They take good angles and they get guys on the ground. And so I think that that'll be an interesting aspect of this game because we haven't seen Baylor do a ton sideline to sideline. I think you have to try and use your speed in this game to some level, but you really just need guys to be able to break tackles. And obviously that's easier said than done, but I always just love watching defenses who tackle really well. There's just something when you're, it's just very, it's something is right in the world. And so kudos to them for that.
Yeah. I think this is another. I mean, Baylor has got a lot of shot teams this year. Like Tech's going to be a team where they're going to take a lot of shots. They took a lot of shots against Colorado, Utah. They're going to do it again against BYU. I do think that Baylor is going to have a little bit better of a chance to probably get some outside runs, like some screen stuff, because I don't think like outside. You know, when you're running a wide receiver screen or a tunnel screen, those are real easy to blow up if your cornerback can make a superhuman play and break up a block. You know, from an incoming. From the incoming offensive lineman, Travis Hunter blows that play up and, you know, makes the play. That's a little bit more difficult to do if you're just in the right position, but you don't have the athletic ability of what Colorado's.
Well, and we saw Baylor ran a ton of those perimeter screens against Air Force.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a you know, extension of the run game to sound like everyone from 2008. But that you're going to see a lot of that extension of the run game because I don't think they're going to get a lot of movement on the inside in this game just because of the way that BYU is just so technically sound with their defensive line. So I think you're going to see – it's going to be that and it's going to be like shots off of that. But I do think it's going to be a little bit more consistent up and down. I think they'll be able to get the ball into the middle of the field, which is what you have to do to generate – consistent drives out of the passing game. Like they didn't even try that against Colorado. So off like defensively for Baylor, you know, I'm pretty optimistic. Like
sure.
It's Colorado. Colorado national primetime game in Boulder. They gave up 31 points and 14 of those points were on two of the biggest freak long distance plays that you'll see all season. And, you know, if they – that's not an excuse to get out of that. Like, it's still the safeties blew both those plays. But there's no way – I don't look at anyone on the schedule and go, unless Baylor turns the ball over a lot, like, who's getting over 30 against them? That's kind of a serious question that I would have. I just don't see that. Like,
Well, and the Baylor's defense should be very well versed in how. I mean, this is the Grimes scheme. It's not the exact same, but like how to attack the wide zone and all that kind of stuff. They should be very comfortable in how they attack that too. So there's that aspect of the game.
Yeah, and so every time now I think it's fair for Baylor fans to kind of look at it and go, okay, is this a game where can Baylor get into the low 20s and be competitive, or get into the upper 20s and like have a real good shot to win the game? I think BYU is a better overall team than Colorado, and I still think that like this feels like a game to me that is probably somewhere in the upper 20s, like a 28, 26, 29, 25 type game, somewhere in there. What are your thoughts?
Well, I just want to. We have 2 minutes here, so I don't know if we can do this in 2 minutes.
We got five. I just got messaged that people on the team are running late.
Well, so good. I think we can do this then, because I think honestly, beyond any of the schematics, you know, we kind of touched on some of this stuff, but the real question in this game is like Baylor is. You know, I love kind of military history and stuff like that. Like Baylor right now is a team to where they just got their butt handed to them on day one of a battle, and like you have to wake up and rally the troops, and you've still got numbers to do something. And can they do it? And so that's kind of my main question, is like the psyche of the team in this game. I'm not asking for like inside sources or anything, Jeff, but just kind of what are your kind of thoughts on that whole aspect? Like, do you think that this is a team that's going to let Colorado beat them twice? Or do you feel like, no, they're going to be able to clear it? And because I think Aranda is able to clear it, but it's a different thing for the coach. It's a different thing for the coach to do it than for the team to do it. And it's not just a second, Jeff. It's not just your team leaders doing it. It's your you can't have half of your team have cleared it and the other half haven't. So the organizational aspect of, can Aranda clear this game for his team? I'm really interested in that.
Y'all can't see me. I'm like nodding my head up and down violently. So like this game, like I'm going back into the way back machine here. This game reminds me a lot from a program perspective of Iowa State in 2019, which was like that 2019 game was at home. Rule had been building for 2 years to like get to this game. It was time for them to like throw the switch and to be able to have this super physical style and grind that game out at home and out execute, you know, against that cover, that drop eight coverage and just execute down the field and all the stuff he'd been preaching. And I remember writing before that game of like, this is the game that he was talking about. Like it, you know, it's put up or shut up time. Like I cannot wait to see this game because this is the culture he says he's been building towards. Can he actually do it? The BYU game is very big for me about not just like, because if they win this game, they're going to get to six wins. Like to me, it's just like, okay, lock it in the bank. But it's not just that, like, the thing that Aranda has struggled with organizationally as the head coach is getting the team to buy in and to follow his explicit emotional leadership, to clear the mental stuff, to focus in on the game, to play the game the way that he wants them to play it, the way that he believes it should be played. It's been too much of, in the past, of him kind of like trusting that the kids are going to play the way that he thinks they should be played, and then like, you know, sometimes the discipline's too harsh, sometimes it's too lax, trying to get that all dialed in. But this is the game, you know what I mean? Like, and it does, again, doesn't even mean they're going to win, but like, you'll be able, everyone will be able to tell real fast if they got beat again. The go-to example I have for this is the Texas game when Baylor lost against TCU in 2015, and then they came home and they went out there, and that was the game before anything happened with Art Briles. 2015 against Texas was when I knew Art Briles was never going to get them anywhere that they wanted to be, because they went out there and like the 2015 team was like, we don't want to be here. And they just let Texas literally slap them around until the quarterback got injured in the second quarter. Like, literally, they, like, Texas was throwing cheap shots, late hitting dudes, throwing guys to the ground, face masks. And the Baylor guys were like, please, sir, can I have another? Like, they just were not in the game at all. And Baylor fans will be able to tell immediately whether or not the team is there. And so, like, this is – Aranda has a chance to me to not, like – like, I'm not buying all the way in on Aranda with, like, oh, he's the man into eternity or something. But, like, if they come out and they are locked into this game, which I think there's a good chance that they can do, they have – like, they do match up well against BYU. They play hard from whistle to whistle like they did against Colorado. Doesn't mean they don't make mistakes. Just means that they're playing hard and they don't let Colorado beat them. Then, like, that's a really good sign that the issues that had plagued Aranda in 2022, in basically 2020 and then 2022 and 2023, like, that trying to get a handle on the organizational stuff – maybe he has that figured out. And so you and I could be talking about this later, like, oh, like, they totally quit, and it's like, yeah, it just, no,
right,
it just, he can't, he's,
yeah, and that's what's hard. You know, we do our Sikkim 365 staff predictions for the games, and usually by Tuesday or Wednesday I've already kind of gone through everything and submitted my prediction. I'm like kicking the can as long as possible, because I feel like this is a game that's like, you know, in the low 20s to mid 20s to high, you know, somewhere in there, you know, a 24 to 21 type game or whatever. Yep. But I'm just like, I don't know whether I want to pick BYU or Baylor for it, because I think it all just depends on, is this team mentally strong? Are they going to be able to bounce back? And because we know 2023 wouldn't have been able to, I mean, never, they would have never had anything to bounce from or whatever. But anyway,
2022, 2023, like, none of those teams did it. And the 2021 and the 21 team, the Sugar Bowl team, like, that team was exceptionally well coached, but that team also had great senior leadership that Aranda's,
well, yeah, play. And remember, after they had their heart torn out against TCU on the road, they came back, and that was Oklahoma the next week, and they destroyed Oklahoma. Again, this is not the 2021 team. This team is just not that good. Like, I feel very confident in that. But, you know, whether or not they can bounce back this week, it's just hard to know. You know, there's really no way to guess it. But, you know, we'll see.
I'm going to be, like, you know, I always end these, like, pretty glass half full. Like, I think they're going to do it. Like, here's my big prediction: the team with the most turnovers will lose the game.
Okay.
That'll be where I would be concerned. Like, what happens when they turn the ball over in the red zone and it's like 7 points they should have and it's not there? Like, that's
and
the
remember,
stuff.
Remember that BYU has completely insane Blake Shapen as their quarterback. He does suffer from turnovers, so maybe that can work.
They're both pro stuff. So I'm with you. To me, this is I'm a little slightly higher score, I think, because of the bust potential for both Baylor, to be blunt, like Baylor safeties, and just the style of that BYU game. Like, I'm gonna say, like, Baylor 26, BYU 22.
Okay. Yeah, I promise I'm not copying out. Well, I guess I am copying out here. I just really don't know yet. I haven't thought about it, and I don't want to say a number right now. Jeff, how much time do you have left? 1 minute, 2 minutes?
I got 5 minutes, yeah.
Okay, now you have another 5 minutes, okay.
My meeting got pushed by five, so I don't – yeah, it didn't start until 7 okay. or 5.
We'll just finish this up in 2 or 3 minutes then here. I mean, I guess, you know, I don't want to dive into the rest of the Big 12. That's just – we don't have enough time. But I guess I think one interesting topic to close with here is Baylor has just been so, so run-heavy this year, and I know that we talked about how a lot of it is probably just because they can't pass protect. Do you, you know, like literally, I think against Tarleton, Utah, and Colorado, they have run the ball on between like 60 to 65% of plays. Do you expect that to be similar, vastly different, against BYU this Saturday?
Depends on whether or not Spav thinks they can block. So like those extension of the run plays where it's like you throw out into quads and, or if you throw a tunnel screen, it's like, okay, like that's a pass, but really that's just, we're coming up with cute ways to get the ball into the receivers to run on the edges. I think you're going to see more of that. Like I don't, until the offensive, there's two things. I think Robertson is starting to develop a bit of a better sense of timing with those guys compared to even what he did showing.
Yeah, him and Hal Presley looked good, yeah. And I think he's their best hope. I talk about this all the time. Like QBs have to develop a rapport with those top guys, and that's the another thing. When they chose Finn, that delayed this. Now that they're with Robertson.
The big thing for me really is like, you got to trust the offensive line is going to hold up for like 2.5 seconds. Like you just can't, you can't ask Robertson to like drop back and start doing reads if you think he's going to have to move off the point within 2 seconds. Like that just, that's going to screw him up long term. So until they get to that point, I don't think you're going to see too much more passing, to be blunt, like the type of passing that we would expect out of a Spav offense. Once they get more comfortable on the offensive line, or when they think they have the matchups to be able to go heavy on the offensive line and like deploy three or deploy four, then keep a backer in to help. Like that's when I think you'll start to see them open up and saying, okay, like it's first and 10. Like let's run mesh on first and 10 and see what happens. Let's run our zone beater on this play and see what happens. But they're just not going to do that until they feel better about the OL.
So I have basically no hope of Baylor's offensive line becoming like P4 average by season's end. Are you there with me? Do you think they're going to be I think they're going to improve a little bit, but I don't think they're going to be anything improve. Beyond bad.
Like, there's still a lot of blown assignments from a technique perspective, like on wrong shoulders with double teams and like knowing when to chase paint and when to climb and some stuff like that. Like there's still some technique issues that they're struggling with that are better than they were against Tarleton State. So I think the run game is going to improve over the course of the season, but I say all that, like the flip side of it is like the back half of Baylor's schedule is like kind of ass. Like, and so we say all this stuff like Utah and Colorado's fronts, like, yeah, they couldn't block those dudes. But then like, have you seen Houston? Like, have you seen what TCU looks like? Have you seen what some like Texas Tech's defensive tackles are like white hot trash? I mean, those dudes are awful and just like awful, awful. And so like, yeah, they, you know, they're struggling now. Like, I wouldn't trust them in, like, a big bowl game or anything like that. But do they, like, there's also a chance that, like, the run game is going to improve. But I think also they're going to have an ability to be better just because the talent level of the teams in the second half of the season is going to go way down. Like, once they get past Iowa State, there's not some, like, monster defensive front left on the schedule. You know what I mean?
Fair enough.
So, one thing I do before we go on this, like, I got to say something about TCU.
Yeah, if you have time, go ahead.
Like, if you want, like, as bad as upset as Baylor fans were on Saturday night, and I totally get that. Like, I say this point blank, like, I would 1,000,000% rather have our program in its current state with its current staff, with its current roster than TCU's. Like, TCU looks like they got the wrong dude. That's just, there's not, like, when you're losing your temper at, when you're losing your temper at a ref like that and getting thrown out of the game, and then like your QB is just like clearly doesn't want to be there and is like not even doing the like proper reads. He's like literally just turning around and like picking, like the problem with TCU, one of the problems TCU had with all the terms was like their quarterback's like, no, I like this other matchup. So he jumps out of the proper read flow of the play call and just throws it to the guy that he thinks is going to get open. And of course he's not open and he throws it into coverage and it's a pick. Like, TCU just looks really, really bad right now. And they may recover. You know, I sell this, like, they may end up beating Baylor for all I know. But I, that team sucks. And it's really fun because they haven't had a really crappy team in years. Like, it's been a really long time. And, you know, they suffered through like some 6-6 teams. And they're like, oh, woe is me and all this kind of stuff. But TCU has not had like a bad team since like the late 90s. And like, I think they might actually
remember really TD bad. Pod listeners. Jeff has two qualities of a team. They're either amazing or they suck. Amazing. And so I guess I disagree with you pretty strongly in this take. I don't think we have time to get into it, but I'm happy to hear it because I hate TCU.
You were right on BYU, so no one's perfect. Like, okay. You just take that BYU take and just, like, take it home.
Okay. Okay. All right, man. It was nice talking to you. These short ones, and we'll have to do it again. Have a good evening.
Absolutely. All right, man.
Bye. Take care.